is we have a podcast website that we convert the recordings to podcasts so that we can share it to folks that aren't able to make it and join us today. So I have started the recording, and you can get a copy of that if you'd like as well. And after the webinar, usually in a day or so, I'll send out a request for feedback from everybody that attended, which I can also share with you. So, okay. But welcome and thank you for coming. I think Dr. Bouchard could probably introduce you better than I can. He was kind of sharing a little bit about your exercise at DEF CON as people were coming in. But Dr. Bouchard, if you'd like to take it away from there.
Thank you. So Alice, please allow me to welcome you to this event. So this is a class that I teach at Purdue on cybersecurity. It's focused mostly on CISSP certification and certifications in general. And, you know, I wanted to invite you because I was stunned by your performance at DEF CON a few years ago. And, you know, you're a black badge winner, which says a lot. And, you know, the other thing is, you know, you being a woman, I think there's not enough women involved with cybersecurity. Hopefully you can, you know, inspire some young women, and maybe not as much young women, all women in general, I mean, and men also, to pretty much get into this field. I mean, I was stunned to see how you could get people to speak and tell pretty much all of the secrets pretty much about an organization. I was saying that, you know, I witnessed you in the booth where you were talking and getting people to just tell everything. And it was very impressive. It was very, very impressive. So again, please accept my thanks for joining today where I think lots of people are thinking of other things. Again, this event, the format is flexible. We talked before, I think you said you may have some PowerPoints, can use this. So anything that is cybersecurity, social engineering would be perfect. Talking about certifications would be perfect. And with that, if you want to say a few words, go ahead. And again,
absolutely.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course. No, thank you so much for having me. It is my absolute pleasure to join you all today. I highly respect Purdue and I'm a huge college football fan, but I won't disclose my team because it might alienate the audience. So I'm going to select a screen to present to you right now. And hopefully this works. All right, so hopefully you can see my screen and you're seeing the title slide for Hack Your Next Job. Okay, so this is a presentation I gave recently at a cybersecurity conference. I'm gonna go a little bit off book, but we're gonna cover some of these details more in line with what your main objectives are probably going to be in the coming months or years. Many of you will be applying for jobs, whether it's your first job or your next job. These tactics will all work to your advantage. So what we're basically talking about is social engineering your way into your next job. And we're gonna use some tactics that recruiters use to OSINT and find open source intelligence and find new candidates for roles. So quick disclaimer, don't do bad things with the stuff that you're gonna learn today. Don't break the law and you won't get in trouble. So very brief there as far as the disclaimer goes. So who am I? And why am I in a position to give you advice about finding your next job? My day job by day, I am the market intelligence manager for the Manpower Group Talent Solutions Global Market Intelligence team. What that means is that I help people within the Manpower Group company, which is a giant family of brands and many different aspects of the staffing and sourcing world. We find people work and we help our clients find people to do that work. And what I do specifically is identify markets where specific pockets of skills are located and help to connect the recruiters with those skills, as well as determining which markets would be great for companies that are looking to fit certain types of roles and certain types of business strategies too. I'm most well known for achieving the honor of a black badge from DEF CON through my win at the Social Engineering Capture the Flag competition within SE Village in their 10th anniversary contest, which occurred in 2019. I know it feels like years ago, but I am still the reigning champion, and it is a tremendous honor to be able to say that. I competed twice. The first year I was in, I believe, fifth or sixth place. And then the second year I came back to win the contest, and it was just an incredible experience. And I can talk about it happily for hours, but I won't bore you. I'm also a silver second place and black first place badge winner in the Trace Labs OSINT CTF competitions, which is a monthly event where they do OSINT for good, and they help to gain as much intelligence as they can on missing persons and give that information to law enforcement so they can potentially open up cold cases and find new leads for those missing persons and their whereabouts. And finally, I'm an ambassador of the Innocent Lives Foundation, an organization that helps to unmask online predators and give those dossiers of information to law enforcement so that they can take these predators off the internet and save children from being victimized by online predators. So, competitive intelligence, sourcing and recruiting, what the heck do I actually do? I generally work with different types of recruiting models, different programs within the Manpower Group family of brands to identify talent, review skills, and align client needs to four main categories of metrics: availability of talent, the cost efficiency of that talent, the regulation of the workforce market where that talent's located, and how productive that market can be. Through my experience, I've learned how recruiters source candidates. So many recruiters will look for there are three main different types of recruiting: direct search, where they're looking for a specific individual and they just want to find specific people who can fill a limited number of roles; express recruiting, which is typically used in a bulk environment where you're trying to hire many people to do one more low-skilled role, like a manufacturing role that is focused on production and things like that. And then, of course, there's headhunting, where recruiters are trying to essentially poach talent from other organizations. And this is something that we call recruiting of passive talent, meaning people that aren't specifically looking for work but could be open to moving into a new company and into a new role. So we're going to talk about how you can come into focus for recruiters while they're doing these different types of sourcing and looking for new candidates. Very similar to the idea of SEO or search engine optimization, you want to leverage keywords, and using these keywords that I'm speaking about isn't so much related to your personality or aspects of your soft skills or things like dependability, reliability, self-starter, great time management, eloquent writer. Those types of things are important, but when we're talking about leveraging keywords for the goal of being found by these recruiters, we want to use keywords that are specific to the responsibilities of the role. Or in your particular instance, using the acronyms for your certifications, making sure that those are clear, visible, and easy to find, whether that's in your title on LinkedIn, and we'll get to that a little bit later, or making sure that they are prominently shown and displayed on your resume. These are all things that are going to help you get found, because what certifications do is they get you past HR to the people who can really analyze your skills and find out and determine if you are the right person for the role. You're just trying to get past that initial screening from the HR and the recruiting side of becoming found and moving on in the process of getting offered a job. So you're going to want to optimize your social media as well as your resume to try to leverage those things and get your profile found by recruiters. So LinkedIn for recruiters. Recruiters are coached to do a number of different things on LinkedIn to make sure that they are accurately and effectively advertising roles so that they can find candidates a lot more quickly. So 92% of companies use social networks such as Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn to recruit candidates. However, LinkedIn is definitely the most popular platform. 75% of professionals are open to considering a new job. So you may currently be employed and relatively happy where you are. You're not really looking for a new job, but if something better came along, you may be excited about taking on a new opportunity. only 61% of companies are recruiting these passive candidates, which is about 3 out of 4 LinkedIn users right now. So here's a giant paragraph about what recruiters do to try to find better talent by improving their own activity on LinkedIn. If it's a large corporation, typically they already have a social media presence, and so these people would kind of play off of those. But if it's a smaller company, they're going to want to create a company page, take the time to write very accurate and descriptive job listings, post the objectives for the role and what they're really looking for as far as skills are concerned. And then they're going to keep an eye on what other companies in their space are doing to attract talent. Sometimes this means offering some non-wage benefits, things like extra days off, flexibility to work from home, different bonuses, signing and seniority and tenure bonuses. We've seen a combination of all kinds of things, especially since the world ended earlier this year and companies have had to really adjust their recruiting tactics. They communicate with candidates and they actually have the ability to basically flag profiles on LinkedIn if they have a special recruiter subscription to LinkedIn and be informed if that person makes a change. So if somebody that they have their eye on who has the skills they're looking for but has said, hey, I'm happy where I'm at, I'm not interested in a new job, if those people are still interesting to them, they can flag their profiles, up to 150 of these profiles, to see if they change their status to open to work or something like that, and then receive a notification about that. So be wary, be alert to the fact that you may be being watched if you have a particular set of skills. So searching for skills, recruiters are limited their searches to using various methods to try to bring certain talent into focus. And what this does is it really restricts or puts blinders on them. So by refining their search criteria, similar to the results that you would get in any internet search, you're gonna limit the available results if you narrow your scope or narrow the focus of your search too much. So by limiting the focus on education and experience or where people currently work or where people are located, they're really limiting their ability to find amazing, incredible talent that they could 100% use within the organization and that could be extremely successful. For example, if they're limiting their talent to just the immediate geographical area, or if they're limiting their talent to people with only, you know, higher level degrees, whether they have higher level certifications, you know, that kind of thing, they can really, you know, push a lot of people that would be really well suited to the role out of consideration by doing that. So you can overcome being left out of these searches by aligning your profile to display what is used to search for people who perform these jobs more frequently by the recruiters. And this is a list of things that you can do, and you're welcome to screen cap any of these slides. This is a list of stuff that you can do to try to become more visible by participating on LinkedIn. Follow the companies that you would want to work for. Take the time to write very accurate and descriptive resumes. Your resume should be based on measurable metrics and accomplishments rather than personality traits and responsibilities. I can make a hedgehog responsible for something, but it doesn't mean that he's going to be good at it. So instead of saying something like, I was responsible for XYZ, tell a story or a bit of a narrative about an accomplishment or value that you added to the team or to the company. Keep an eye on what others are doing. For example, if there's somebody who you admire in this space and you want to potentially have their job one day, look at what they do, follow some of their leads, share some of the content that they share, and engage with them. Communicate with recruiters and network with people who work for the organizations that you want to work for. Be prompt and responsive, and remember that this is a social network. It should be social. The flow of information should go both ways. So you're going to want to nurture these connections and make sure that you engage with these people, comment on their stuff, share your ideas, because ultimately what this is going to do is bring more visibility to your profile. And I know we're focusing a lot on LinkedIn, but the same could be said for Twitter and various other platforms. I can't tell you how many opportunities have come to me via Twitter. Recruiters search for new talent based on their employer's top performers. So they're going to look at their company, determine which of the individuals currently employed are their top performers, and then try to find people more like them. So if you're connected to those people already on LinkedIn, they're like, hey, this person is super successful. Who do they know that do these things? And they can actually see from your connection that you're, you know, part of that tribe, so to speak. And then you've already gained a measured amount of trust and credibility simply by being connected to somebody that they respect and that they trust and who has skills that have already been validated. Recruiters look through their own coworkers' networks and connections for potential referrals as well. So if they have team members that could potentially refer friends, you know, you want to make sure that you're letting your immediate network know that you're open to work or that you're looking for work as soon as that becomes the case. And that's going to help people put feelers out for you. Some companies actually offer their team members a referral incentive. So if I work for a company and I bring you in as an employee, you're hired after 90 days, I could potentially get a bonus for referring you, which is kind of neat. So you can optimize your LinkedIn profile in a few ways. Choose an engaging banner image. It doesn't have to be anything fancy, but just something that speaks to your personality, or even potentially if you have a higher profile role within a company that is well respected. I mean, I've seen it a number of times in company review websites, like, I only took this job so I could put this company name on my resume. So if you have one of those types of companies that you are currently employed by, use their official branded banner for your LinkedIn and highlight your role there. You are 14 times more likely to be viewed on LinkedIn simply by having a profile image, especially if you're willing to share one that is your face, similar to a real estate agent headshot. I mean, there's a reason why they put their face on everything, because people respond well to being able to see your face and to identify you as a person and not just a piece of paper. Take advantage of the headline, and we'll get into that a little bit later. Participate and engage while remaining current, and you know, dive into LinkedIn at least for, you know, 5 or 10 minutes a day and just poke around, like some things, put a comment or two on something that speaks to you, but make sure that you remain genuine and authentic to your personality and what does interest you, because LinkedIn's algorithms are just going to start showing you similar content. And if you're not engaged or interested in it, it's going to kind of backfire. Optimize your profile with a custom URL. You can actually set a custom URL up for your LinkedIn page that'll make it very easy for you to share your profile on your resume and in job applications as you complete those online. And then also use those keywords in your profile, whether it's in the bio or within the body of each of your roles where you've had experience with specific things. Make sure you add all your volunteering time. Make sure that you put, you know, every organization that you have been involved with, whether it's as a volunteer or a, you know, participant within the organization, who's paid. You can put in your certifications, any, you know, continued education that you've been doing in or outside the scope of your work at college. And then you can also add things like volunteering badges. Lots of organizations, Trace Labs included, are now offering Badger digital badges for accomplishments when you compete or when you volunteer to judge, things like that. And you can add those to your profile as well. So moving on from this part, we're going to dive in just to that title bit that I was referring to in the last slides. It is essential that you take advantage of your title on LinkedIn, because your LinkedIn title is everything except just your title. People will usually only see your name, your default or profile picture on LinkedIn, and your title. So what I'm showing you here is what not to do. Because, okay, so I'm me and I'm a market intelligence manager. That doesn't really tell people a whole lot, because most people won't see the company because they won't actually click through into my profile. So what they'll mainly see is just that I'm a market intelligence manager, but I want to make sure that I give it the extra value of working for a global organization like Manpower Group, and that I add that component. So add your company or add something else that's beneficial. If you say you are not currently employed, but you want to highlight the fact that you have specific certifications, then what I would do is I would add those certifications to the end of your name. So your name, comma, and then whatever the abbreviations for your certificates, that is perfectly acceptable. And it's actually very much encouraged on LinkedIn. And then you can add a little bit of context to that. If you want to use the title area to say that you're open to work or what roles you're specifically looking for, you can do that there. And it is completely encouraged and acceptable on LinkedIn. So you can add your company, you can add some context to your title, you can add what you're hoping to achieve while you're on LinkedIn, you can add your certifications, but try to give some, the most important thing that you want people to take away from your profile in that space, because typically people will only hover over your name and that's all they're going to learn about you, because LinkedIn has that great feature where it tells everybody who looks at your profile, and most people like to avoid that. So here are some sites that you can explore for social recruiting and job posting. Facebook actually has a job posting section. Monster, Indeed, ZipRecruiter, Glassdoor, Snagajob, CareerBuilder, job.com, the list goes on. So you want to check these sites out, not only for open jobs, but for jobs similar to the job that you want to get. So this is going to give you a good idea of the skills, responsibilities, and the types of things that employers expect from people who they want to fill these jobs. And then you can start to try to make sure that your resume and your skills mirror those things, so that when you are applying to jobs, you can essentially take the bullet points out of the resume or out of the job description, copy those bullet points into a resume that you modify and create specifically to apply to this role, and then speak to each one of those bullet points as they relate to you. And if there's something in there that doesn't resonate with you or that you don't have the skills or the capabilities, you can leave that out. But this is a really great starting point to make sure that when people are reviewing this resume and the recruiters or the talent acquisition people within the company are reviewing the resume, they're like, well, I can't really dispute that this person is qualified for this role because they've hit every single bullet point in the requirements for this role as we have outlined it. So this is a great place for you to get an idea of what employers are looking for and then craft your resume to resonate with those teams that are reviewing those. And here are another bunch of very specific types of recruiting sites for very specialized roles. Not all of these are going to speak to you, of course, but just don't limit yourself to the big ones. There are definitely opportunities for you to network within other groups, groups on Facebook, things like that, where you can find other people who are looking for your particular set of skills or who are possessing those skills and can give you advice for where you can look for jobs. So you want to align your skills and attributes to the job descriptions of the roles that you want to apply for. You want to include details about your hobbies, interests, volunteering, contests, or participation in continued education. If you attended a virtual conference this year, you took a training and you got a certificate for participating in that specific training, it is perfectly acceptable to add that in a continued education or ongoing learning or however you want to title that section of a resume. It's also perfectly acceptable to create resumes that are longer than one page, and consider adding a personal narrative or a professional summary in addition to your work experience and your education on your resume to kind of give you a little bit more personality and humanize you to the person who's reviewing the resume, because you are more, much, much more than just your education and your prior work experience. Especially if you're just starting out in this industry, it can be a little bit difficult to either switch industries or get started as somebody who doesn't have a lot of experience working or being a part of a team under your belt. So consider adding a personal narrative, and then ask your friends, family, or trusted members of your professional circle to review these resumes as you create them and give you feedback. What looks great? What do they like? What do they not like? What do they think you can improve? What did you forget to talk about? What accomplishments did you omit by accident? And have them give you some feedback so that you can refine that resume and make it something that really speaks to people. So here's a great resource and inspiration. Jason Blanchard is also known as Banjo Crashland. And he does an ongoing Twitch TV stream. He does it twice a week. And here's the schedule. Welcome to screencap this so that you can find him on Twitter and on Twitch. Basically, he discusses how you can hunt for jobs, career advice. This talk was absolutely inspired by the work that he does. And the group that he put together during the pandemic, he's had 20 people, last time I checked, could be more now, who have successfully found new jobs using his tactics. So no vendor pitches. He doesn't sell anything. He is a representative and community manager at Black Hills Security. And he has a YouTube video of a most recent talk that he did about how to hunt for jobs like a hacker, similar idea to this talk, where he goes into detail about his process, which I won't duplicate, but he does a tremendous job of outlining exactly how to do that so that you can get interviews and essentially get past that first step with HR. What I encourage you to do is aspire to create natural and engaging conversations. Reach out to people you know who work where you want to work. Create new connections organically, and then endear yourself to the decision makers using these connections. This only works if your connections are genuine and those friendships are sincere. Otherwise, it will backfire on you in a very big way. So I can't stress enough, go to conferences, meet people, find people that inspire you. Make sure you're not the smartest person in the room. It's great if you want to be somewhere in the middle of the pack so that you can share your insight with people, but also learn from other people. But conferences are a great place for you to network and then learn from people who do the things that you want to do. So especially now when we're in the era of the virtual conference, attend as many as you can, jump into the Discords, engage with people on Twitter, and start creating those friendships. Because even if you are hoping to find a job within the next, 12 or 24 months, you want to start nurturing these relationships and creating these connections now so that when it comes time to use them, you have them. And some wonderful resources to learn how to build that trust and rapport and size people up and learn which people are going to be, in your corner and which people could potentially damage your career. I would very much encourage you to get and read the book, Sizing People Up, from Robin Dreek. You can read a little bit more about him here, but essentially he is a formerly a senior agent from the FBI. He has over 20 years of exactly that, sizing people up, and recruiting people to work for him and figuring out which people are counterintelligence. And it's a crazy, wonderful story. And the way he pulls together his insights and tells that story is really wonderful. And then follow that with the Code of Trust, which is going to teach you how to gain the trust and build rapport with people who can have a tremendous impact on your life. But it's also ultimately going to make you a better leader. And you don't need to be a manager or a director to be a leader. You can be a leader in your own life, and this will help you to create more genuine and sincere communications between yourself, your family, your team, your professors, other students. This is going to impact every area of your life. And if you become somebody who is a really fantastic, genuine communicator, and you have that as a skill before you even try to jump into this job market, it's going to help you so much. I can't even explain to you. It's dramatically changed my life. And I only found these resources within the last few years. So I would definitely recommend checking that out as well. And finally, we're going to discuss engaging, and we did touch on this a little bit, so I'm going to speed through it a bit, but participate in conversations online, participate in conferences, virtual and in person, start building a presence and a reputation, connect with people who inspire you, share your ideas, but don't forget to engage with others. So don't just broadcast your thoughts, actually engage with other people's. Grow your network over time. Start now growing these genuine connections and relationships, because they do take time to nurture and get them to the point where people can really help you and will very much be in your corner when you're looking for a new job. Excuse me. Avoid misrepresentation of any kind, because this will damage any rapport and trust that you build. And then remain open, honest, and inspire trust and confidence. And I can't tell you how much of social engineering really boils down to just that. If you've ever taken a job in sales or completed any kind of sales training, you'll find that there are a lot of parallels between this idea of influence, of building rapport, building trust, and communication as a whole. So that would be a benefit and a skill that you can use in pretty much any area of business. And I'm going to wrap it up there because I'd love to open it up to questions. And I see that there are some here in the chat, so I'm going to address those as well. I'm going to grab some water really quick. But here's where you can connect with me online. Most of the time I'm on Twitter. You can also absolutely connect with me on LinkedIn. I have a ridiculously broad network, so you're welcome to take advantage of all of those connections. And then I will hand it back to you, Tina. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much. Yeah, we do have some questions in the chat. And just to your some of your points, I mean, one of the questions I had, because what I tend to do on LinkedIn is I accept everybody who asks to join my network. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I mean, I kind of have a big, huge network now, but you know, to your point, not all of them are people I know. I kind of don't say no. I do get solicited a lot because of that. But is that a bad thing?
Not necessarily. So I do accept most every request I get. If it looks like a legitimate person, even if it is a salesperson or business development, I'll typically accept them because they are connected to a lot of people. And that helps me as somebody who does a lot of market intelligence and competitive intelligence research to expand my network. So we're kind of doing each other a solid. They ask for, you know, connection to my network and I benefit from the connections they have. But if they start to get really spammy and they just start sending me all kinds of, you know, let me schedule 15 minutes on your calendar type messages, then I'll typically shoot them down. And if they keep going, I'll remove them. But in a lot of instances, just because you don't know somebody doesn't mean that you don't have the ability to potentially, you know, gain a great friend or a professional contact through that connection and interaction with them after you accept that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's good advice for anybody that's not as active as you and I are, might be on LinkedIn. I don't get into the posting too much because that was my other question, just from a personal perspective. How much is too much to engage as far as the conversation? Because if you start expressing too many strong opinions, I'm wondering if that could be a problem.
It can backfire on you if you are very opinionated or very strongly opinionated on what would be classified as a hot button issue. I would absolutely encourage staying far away from anything personal, religious, political, or otherwise. And with LinkedIn, I mean, this is not social media management. I'm not teaching a class in social media marketing where, you know, you have to post once a day or you drop off the algorithm and, you know, it's a thing. What I would say is posting once a week or even once a month is perfectly fine. As long as you're interacting, engaging with other people's content or brand content from the companies that you respect on a weekly basis, that's fine too. All you want to do is make sure that if a recruiter goes to your profile, they can see that you have recent activity, that you're engaged, and if they contact you, you're likely to respond. You also want to show it's more important that not the frequency with which you engage with LinkedIn or post on LinkedIn, but the quality of the content. So I would make sure that if you have a recent accomplishment, if you are participating in something that's exciting at school, or you have something that's happening within an organization that you are volunteering at or going to school at, or you know, something that's important that matters to you, you can share that event. Like, I just attended this event and it was fantastic. And here's where you can get the recording for anybody else that's interested. Those types of things are, you know, higher quality organic posts, and they're going to be more engaging to people that are following you. And typically, if you have more people engaging with your content, then they will see you more frequently, and that can only do good things for you.
That's right. Yeah. All right. So there are some other questions from other people. If you want to go into that.
So should you when you receive an invitation, an interview request from, you know, you're going to talk to a manager, would you recommend to connect to this person ahead of the meeting or not?
Let's say you find out that you're going to be speaking to a specific person, but it's because the recruiter said, you know, you're going to be talking with this person. I would wait until you've actually spoken to the person to connect with them. Odds are they have your resume already and they've identified who you are. And if they look at your profile and ask to connect, great. But if not, I would wait until after you've had your first conversation to then go and connect with them. And only because it looks a little stalkery if you reach out in advance, but it's nice to follow up. So say you had a phone call, you connect with them on LinkedIn, then once they accept the invitation, hope they do, then you send them a message that just thanks them for their time and says that it was great to meet them. And then that's not creepy or weird in any way. and then so it looks like somebody is looking for information about trying to get a local ISP to hire them. I would go on LinkedIn. I would look at the company's page, follow that. Then I would go and view the employees that work for that company that have identified themselves as employees of the company and start connecting to as many of those as you can. And then I would go take a look at the company mission, their priorities, some job descriptions. You can find a lot of this stuff even within the context of LinkedIn, but that is the point where I would jump off into Glassdoor, see what you can learn about the company through company reviews from past and present employees, try to get a good feel for what their culture is. Do you really still want to work there? And then see how you can leverage maybe some of your existing connections or friends who could potentially know people that work there to try to get your resume in front of decision makers, people who could actually influence the company to hire you, as opposed to just somebody in talent acquisition or HR that's going to throw your resume on a desk and it may never get seen. So that's what I would do. I will share that I have received offers for every single one of the jobs that I've had in my entire life through personal connections and referrals from either current or former employees of the business that I am hired from or hired to work at. So it is very important who you know, not what you know, because I'm confident that all of you are going to have the skills through your education. Now you're trying to really set yourself apart. And if you can make it seem like you are closer to being an employee than the other guy, then you can potentially get hired just on the basis that they feel like you're more likely to fit in from a business culture and a networking perspective, that you'll be easier to train because you have friends there, or that you'll be better equipped to dive in because you already know some people and you've already had some connections with the company and with people who work there. It's very, very strange how you can influence people to see you as another person they respect if you connect to that person and display that connection, whether it's simply on a social network or through your interactions or engagement when you apply for the job. Name drop is what I'm saying.
Okay.
So I had a question about, in the past it was always like a death wish if you put like a typo in your cover letter or your resume.
Oh, yes.
I assume that's still the same for LinkedIn, right? I mean, your LinkedIn profile should be pristine, right? I mean,
yes.
How much of a red flag is that for you?
I would absolutely make sure that you put the time into making sure that you catch any typos. And really a lot of today's web browsers have spell check built into them. So just make sure that you're reviewing those text fields and that you take the time to do that, because there are a lot of fake profiles out there online and there are a lot of scammy LinkedIn users out there, and you don't want to give people pause by not having things be grammatically correct or having a lot of typos and spelling errors and things like that. So make sure that you've got everything together, that your resume matches the experience and, you know, the responsibilities section where you talk about your achievements and accomplishments. Because in a lot of cases, when you apply for a job, you're going to upload your resume and then it's going to OCR that text and just pull it into various text fields. And that's going to help you to avoid having those types of typos carry over into your actual job applications if you can make sure you head it off at the pass.
Yeah, and that was a good point, because I had a friend who had a resume that listed a particular school he had worked at. He was in education too. Mm-hmm. And it was not on his LinkedIn profile. And that caused a huge red flag because really very curious to say, okay, well, why didn't you put this on your LinkedIn profile? You have it on your paper today. So just the mismatch was a big red flag. And as it turned out, it was a job that he was let go from.
And he just was a little embarrassed.
Well, he was trying to avoid it being known, but not very well, apparently. So, just the mismatch was kind of a red flag. Are there other things that you catch that just like, nope, next, you look at it and say that's a deal breaker on their profile?
I would say on a profile, just anybody who, like we said, they're too personal with the content that they're sharing on LinkedIn. And you know what? Your personal views are your own, but they can really polarize people's perception of you and their bias towards you. And so it's important to keep that stuff neutral because LinkedIn really is a professional platform. What I will say is my Facebook is my personal life, and that is really limited to my close family. And that's where I share, you know, pictures of my kids and, you know, stuff like that. But LinkedIn, I really limit to just my professional life and things that I would say I'm comfortable with the CEO of my current employer and any potential future employer seeing and understanding that that is who I am, because this is going to be their first impression of me, essentially. So if I'm in there ranting about something to do with how certain employers are identifying skills or, you know, I mean, even though it's in the context of work, if I'm saying, you know, we're not hiring enough people of this type and I'm really, you know, ticked off about it, that could potentially identify me as kind of a problem or a diva or somebody who's difficult to work with. And that's not the light that I would like to be cast in.
Yeah. Cool. Well, and you, I think Dr. Brocard had a question too, but you mentioned Facebook real quick. I'm not a big Facebook person either. I'm kind of the same. I have mostly only my family there. But for those that still partake, I know a lot of our cybersecurity are anti-Facebook, so that's a good thing.
Yes.
For those that still are partake, how important is it to scrub the profile on your Facebook as well?
You know what? I would say that it's incredibly important to make sure that as much of your Facebook activity is private to people who are not directly connected with you as a friend as possible. However, make sure that you understand that there is the potential for somebody to connect with you and then screen cap and share things that you share there. So ultimately, everything you put on the internet should be considered public, and it should be considered something that could potentially be on a billboard on the side of the road. That level of visibility is something that you need to acknowledge being possible with any social network, Twitter and Instagram and everything else included. So what I would say is if you are actively looking for a job, and you don't really participate in Facebook very much, but you may have some stuff out there that you don't particularly want recruiters and HR talent acquisition people to see about you. Maybe you've made some, you know, lewd jokes or comments on a friend's profile, stuff like that. I would encourage you to deactivate your Facebook account while you are job seeking, just for the sake of your own privacy. And then once you get the job, if you're comfortable with turning it back on, then great. But if you're actively out there seeking a job and you don't want there to be any potential weirdness, then that's what I would do is deactivate it. I use Facebook very, very infrequently. And also, though, the majority of what I share on Instagram is pictures of my chickens. So I don't know how that could be detrimental to me. But, you know, I would consider deactivating the account if you're actively looking for work. And that's not something that you use very often. If you feel like there's any questionable content there that could be found whatsoever, comments you've made in groups, comments you've made, you know, in past posts, on your profile pictures, on your cover picture, all that stuff's public. And for you, you can see all of your content. So when you go to your profile, you're seeing everything. But when people who look at your profile go to your profile, all they're seeing is public posts. And there may be some that you forgot about 6 years ago that are a little colorful in nature and that you don't want being looked at by your potential employer.
For sure. All right. Anyone else have questions? Dr. Brocard?
Would you recommend going to Google and searching for your yourself to make sure that there's no mess? And then what would you do? Let's say you find something out of the blues. I mean, I remember in my case, it was something about me teaching in a university in China.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, do not believe I ever taught in China. and it was hell to have that removed. I mean, that's for the little story. What would you recommend doing about sites that, you know, I mean, if you have stuff that you cannot remove somehow?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's tough. I mean, I think that all of us have a responsibility to kind of do regular checks and Google our own name. You can also set up Google Alerts. And if you have a unique name such as mine, it makes it a little bit easier. But if you have a more general name that's common with the common spelling, that could actually work in your favor too, because it's a lot harder to find you specifically in the crowd of people with similar names. But for people like me, I mean, you search my name and everything that comes up is me. I think there's only like 3 other elites that are currently alive in the universe right now, and I know at least 2 of them, and we talk. So it's tough for people such as myself with unique names to hide. So it's important to do like the Google Alerts and kind of take a look at what that stuff is. And if it looks like it's something that is, you know, inaccurate or that could be defamatory, then I would definitely report that to whatever network or hosting entity is responsible for that content. But there's only so much you can do. So I would say the best course of action is to make sure that you are putting content out there that you're proud of, that you're representing yourself accurately and genuinely and engaging with people. And then having those people connected to you is going to do a lot to give you credibility when you have to essentially prove that you are who you represent yourself as. Whether that's in skill or personality or, you know, whatever, it's nice to have people on your side that can speak to that. So if you have the ability to get people to put references on your LinkedIn, letters of recommendation for students, if you have professors or people that you have, built a good rapport and a relationship with during the course of your education, ask them for letters of recommendation and add those to your portfolio. And don't be shy about sharing those with prospective employers, because when you're lacking job experience, it can be difficult to build credibility even when you have the skills. And that can go a long way. If they say you showed up on time every day and you were excited to learn and you did really well in your assignments, all of those things speak to transitioning those skills over into an employment setting where you could be successful in a variety of ways. And you would be shocked how difficult it is for many employers to find candidates who will even show up for the interviews. So, you know, don't limit yourself as far as what skills you think are important, and definitely don't read a job description and go, oh, well, just because I don't tick every single one of these boxes, I shouldn't apply for this job. Never eliminate yourself. Let them do that.
Daryl shared a question. Do you feel a lack of social media is a negative thing?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, if you can show and demonstrate your skills in other ways, you can definitely get around having a big social media presence. I know a lot of the most crazy, ridiculous, awesome, amazing, incredible hackers and information security people in this community, some of them have 4 followers on Facebook or on Twitter. And you know, they're extremely accomplished, extremely knowledgeable, and very well respected. Under their, you know, experience and their capabilities and their demonstrated capabilities, but they have 0 footprint when it comes to social media, and that's fine. Social media is just a tool that you can leverage if you're comfortable with doing that to try to gain bigger visibility and stand out when recruiters are going to hire people. That's kind of the first thing they do, is go look and see what their social media looks like.
So you would make sure absolutely that your profile is absolutely current. So you're not just one job behind to avoid broadcasting too much stuff, right? I mean, you would avoid that.
Yes, I would make sure it's current. If you're comfortable disclosing who your current employer is, then yes. Other ways that you can get around disclosing too much information about yourself is simply listing the job title and the company that you work for currently, and not showing your employment history on your LinkedIn profile. And you can use your resume and share that exclusively with people where you apply for a role, as opposed to showcasing all of your prior experience, every single platform that you did work in, every single accomplishment, every skill you have, every responsibility you have. I will say that as a social engineer, I love people like that, because it gives me the ability to go review people who work at a company and then learn about what types of infrastructure and applications and security protocols and everything they use through the people that tell about their role within the company a little bit too much. So for operational security or OPSEC, you can absolutely strip your experience down to just your current role and your current employer. Or you can just show the employer and your job title for each of your most, you know, recent occupations within the past decade, within the past 5 years, whatever you're comfortable with, and kind of use that as a means of limiting what people can learn about you before you actually engage them and apply for a role.
Okay. What else?
Oh, yes. And absolutely make sure that your profiles are scrubbed of any personal identifying information. That's a great point from the chat.
Yeah. And don't share when you're planning to leave the house, right?
Right. Exactly. Oh, yes. Also don't share that you're open for work if you're not willing to let your employer know that you're open for work. Because even though they do have the ability to make it so that only recruiters can see that you're open to work, but recruiters from outside of your organization is where it allows you to limit that. There is always the potential that somebody could tell somebody that you work with, or, you know, bring it up in conversation without even realize they're blowing your cover.
I had an employee update his profile on LinkedIn, and I got notified before he resigned.
Oh, my goodness. That's slightly embarrassing.
And I was like, congratulations, I think. I mean, you know, I do. It's like, okay.
That brings up a wonderful point, and that is that I would absolutely encourage you, if you are moving from one position to another, to give the employer the option of the 2 weeks notice, and to make sure that you leave that job with all of your bridges intact, because you never know where your life is going to take you. And it could be that even though it's with a different organization, this circle is small, and you could see security professionals from, you know, the last employer or two employers ago popping up at your new company, and they have a very negative perception of you, and you may not get the job because, you know, you burned that bridge when you left the company that you worked at previously together.
So yeah. Point, what do you do if at one point relationship was not good? There's always going to be a case where the relationship was not good, or there was something that was not good. So what do you do to mitigate that?
It's tough. I mean, you've got to decide if you really want to work there first. Do I really want to work on a team with somebody that I've had a negative experience with, that I don't like, or that doesn't like me? That should be your first question. Because ultimately, if you're unhappy in the role, it's not going to last. Regardless of how well skilled you are for it and how much, say, you're... For example, I've applied to hundreds of jobs within the scope of my employment for competitive intelligence, finding out what other employers are doing that my client could do better, for example. And one of the jobs that I applied for, I actually made it through to like several interviews. And one of the interviews was with the director of the whole team. Went great, he was wonderful, really liked me, looked like everything was gonna work out really great. And then I had to go have an interview with the hiring manager, which was below him, but would be my direct manager if I chose to accept the offer and move forward with the role. She and I did not get along. There was no animosity, but I could tell that the second we got on the phone, we had different ideas about what this role was going to bring to the company. We just did not click. And I was like, you know, if I was going to pursue this role seriously, this would be a deal breaker for me. Just not being able to get along with your direct manager is something that's going to make your life miserable. So I will say that, you know, when one door closes, another door opens, and that has proven to be the truth. So for me personally, So when you feel like, you know, all hope is lost or your dream job just evaporated, just keep in mind that in retrospect, maybe not tomorrow or next month, but, you know, in the years to come, you're going to look back on this moment and you've learned a great deal through the process. It's going to make you better for the next series of interviews.
Okay. Do you think that it makes sense potentially for students to post some of their better papers into tools like LinkedIn to get noticed potentially by what they have to say?
The hacker in me says no, only because I think that people would plagiarize the work. If it's too easy to find on the internet, somebody's going to steal it. And I only say this because people have already ripped off my conference talk titles this year and tried to use them as their own. So everybody's out there Googling things to find stuff to, you know, work smarter, not harder. So I would probably discourage people from sharing their work, especially if it's not something that they can copyright or ensure that it's going to remain safe from plagiarism. What I would do though, is if you have papers that you're proud of, you can add them to the publications section of your LinkedIn and just share the title and a synopsis or an abstract of that paper. And that way it demonstrates that you are a competent writer, that you've explored these ideas, that you have accomplishments within a certain vein of education or, you know, continued education or insight or thought or analysis. But you're not giving up the full content and allowing people to potentially steal your ideas.
Okay. What do you think of certifications? Do you think any certification? I mean, obviously, I'd like you to say that CSSP is the best because it's something that is geared towards people passing CSSP. But do you have any comments about these?
So I'm going to give you my left and my right brain perspectives on certifications. And this is coming from somebody who holds no certifications, so please take it for what it's worth. As far as an HR professional is concerned, the CISP certification is the gold standard of certifications within information security. This puppy will open all the doors as far as getting your resume seen and passed up the chain within an organization. As I mentioned before, certifications get you past HR, they get you to the decision makers, and the CISP is the top of that pyramid. So if you're able to achieve a CISP and have that on your resume and like my name, comma, CISP in your LinkedIn, you're gonna find that that does wonders for you as far as getting your resumes read and getting interviews and, you know, working your way through the interview process in a variety of organizations. I will also say, as somebody who does not have any certifications, that I'm not an expert as far as like the information security side of things goes. And the more technical requirements to pass the CISP exam and all those things, I'm not equipped to answer that question. Is it the best certification? From my perspective, yeah, it absolutely is. Because I know from a recruiting and a sourcing perspective that when my clients come to me for these skills, and I look at their job descriptions that they've written for the people that they're looking for, when they say one or all of these certifications, the CISP is the one that holds the most weight. And that, I believe, is an accurate measure of the value of that certification. Is there such thing as an OSINT certification? I don't believe that there is an OSINT certification, but there are absolutely courses that you can do that focus on OSINT. I know that SANS offers a very comprehensive OSINT course. There's an OSINT course from Occupy the Web, and Hackers Arise is the website for that one. And then there are several OSINT courses that you can do through various providers, one of which comes to mind is Joe Gray. Trace Labs has a number of different partners, Joe Gray being one of them, but OSINT Curious is another. They offer a ton of different trainings and courses you can take, and you receive certifications for completing those, but it's not like an OSINT certification. I hope that makes sense. But SANS, it's definitely a certification. You can add that at a higher level on your resume, so to speak.
Would you concur that the The SAN certifications are probably top of the line, typically.
Yeah, I would say, in my opinion, SANs and then offensive security would be my top tier of the more specialized certifications outside of the traditional, the CISP and then the other ones that come from the similar vein of like the Security Plus and those stacking certifications.
Okay. Cool. Do we awesome. Have any other questions from anyone?
Nathaniel?
Okay. My question is with hacking. I'm a hacker myself. With the future of hacking, automating our hacking tasks, is that going to take us over? We're not going to have jobs because of that?
I would say absolutely not. And this is something that we've studied extensively through Manpower Group and manufacturing specifically, but I feel like it reaches over into a variety of different industries. Ultimately, there's always going to have to be some human element to security. Machines cannot do everything. So what I think when we're talking about eliminating jobs, we may be eliminating certain types of roles, but what's going to come out of these advancements in technology is an evolution of roles to different types of roles. So for example, in prior industrial revolutions and things like that, we went from hiring tons of unskilled labor to hiring mechanics and people who could work on the equipment that we were now using to do a lot of those manual processes. So the skills are going to evolve. You know, we're going to need more developers. We're going to need more people that can do analysis and validate the work that the AI and machine learning processes are doing for us now to take the burden off of us for the manual tasks. But, you know, it brings in a new skill set and a new need within the market for talent that can oversee those processes and maintain them.
Thank you.
So where would you recommend that some of our students go in terms of, to be successful in their careers, what would you recommend for them to do?
The very first thing I would recommend and the thing that really just pushed me into the area where I was confident enough to start doing consulting through Dragonfly Security and to offer my services to a variety of different security companies was really making those connections that started with DEF CON. And after that, I branched out into the more information security focused conferences and started offering my talks in the CFPs and things like that. And you don't have to be, a seasoned pro. And unfortunately, the same people get accepted to talk every time at these conferences because they're the only ones that are submitting talks. So if you have something that you've explored, something that you've learned, a project that you're working on, you would be completely shocked at how interested and how keen this community is to see new ideas and see new faces and new names on these rosters for conferences like B-Sides and some of the smaller villages within DEF CON. People want to see new things. I mean, there are definitely places that you can create a name for yourself. And if there's something that really resonates for you within this field, you can definitely get in the smaller conferences. If you're not super confident, you don't want to go for the big ones quite yet, start small. Start with your local DEF CON group. Start with your local DerbyCon community group and try to get involved with people and do that because it's only going to make you better and you're going to have the ability to make them better. And those relationships, similar to the relationships you make in college, are going to carry over into your personal and professional lives.
Cool.
Yep. Great advice. Great advice for sure.
Okay. Anyone else have a question? Otherwise, I think we're going to thank you for your time. It was much appreciated.
Very much.
Dr.
Yeah, Brown, absolutely.
Would you like to conclude?
Yes, thank you very much. Very much appreciate your time today. I think it was a very different presentation than we've had some weeks, and it was very helpful. Everybody, not everybody, but a lot of people here are looking for jobs or looking for better jobs. So I think it's very helpful to understand the kind of the science behind what's going on. I think some people haven't quite made it to LinkedIn yet and refined their profile. And I think that's critically important and has been for quite some time. So I think you really
especially helped. In the virtual job interview world that we live in right now, it's very critical. So thank you so much for having me. It was an absolute pleasure. Everybody's welcome to reach out to me directly after the fact if I missed any questions or you want to ask them privately, don't hesitate to do that. So thank you so much for having me, and I hope you all have a great evening.
Thanks so much. Have a good night, everyone. I'll send out the recording. Bye, guys.
Good night.